Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Worldwide Knicks episode number 69. I'm your host, Rafa, however you prefer to pronounce it. Joining me, Alex, how are you doing?
I'm good, Rafa. It's very up and down start to the season, obviously, but yeah. Just enjoying being back. Good, enjoying chatting to you again. So let's do it.
Yeah. Well, as Alex said, the NBA is back, and so for us Knicks fans, the pain is back. The roller coaster ride is back, and for us Knicks fans who are on Twitter or on X, the roller coaster is, well, it's still a roller coaster. Nothing has changed. Nothing is new. We've been at it a whole year. We have no rest. So NBA started. Three games for the Knicks, two losses, one win. We saw again the worst and the best of the Knicks in three games. Well, not the one against the New Orleans. That was bad altogether. There's nothing there who can salvage it. But against the Celtics and the Hawks, well, we saw highs and lows. Very mixed performances right there. Lost the home opener against the Celtics, the season opener. It's getting to be tradition, Knicks-Celtics. We lost it. We had it at the end, and as Knicks do, we gave up the fourth quarter lead after taking it. So, best Knicks game ever. Can't we beat the Hawks? It's beginning to be a trend as well. In Atlanta, the game was always close, but it's the Knicks. We were playing well when we had the lead. Get a bigger margin of lead, and then we just turned it over a couple of times. Also a trend this week. New Orleans Pelicans, the game against the Pelicans, it was a train wreck altogether. So it was a heavy week for the heart of the Knicks fans.
It's everything rolled into one, isn't it? I mean, it's like the Celtics game was the, you know, dropped the lead late and kind of lost it in the fourth. Then the Atlanta game was almost kind of wire to wire, kind of fairly controlled performance, kept the lead all the way. So, and then we had the fake comeback, was back as well. So we've had a bit of everything in these first three.
I think we also had a former Knicks killing us and Kristaps Porzingis with the Boston Celtics.
Yep.
So we had it all. We had it all. Yep. It was amazing. We had good Randall. We had bad Randall. We had good Brunson, bad Brunson. It's amazing. I love this team.
it's never boring in New York, could it be?
Exactly.
Including except in the NFL, which is the most boring.
That's what I was going to say. Then the New York fan base was at war today because it was the Jets-Giants game. Again, thanks for Omar to introducing me to the Giants. Is another whole level of pain I didn't know existed as well. So, again, another shout-out to him. But yeah, getting back to the Knicks, getting back to the pain we know and love. Let's do it differently this week. Let's look at the negatives as well, because we're Knicks fans, so negative, yes. But let's look at the positives as well of the week, because there were positives for our week. Let's start with the negatives. Now, let's get the negatives out of the way. Let's lead the positive to the end. Alex, what do you think is your negative for the week?
My major negative, and actually leads from my major positive, but the way that Randall in that last game, and I really like Julius Randall. I've been a supporter of him, maybe not as much as Omar, but my major thing with Randall, just to go off on a side tangent at the moment, is, and I mentioned this on Twitter yesterday or today, was that when Randall came onto the Knicks, you know, he was the best player, But I don't think, you know, considering where the team was, it was really down in the depths of hell. And Randall came on and was the best player. But he's never ever been that type of player. And that first playoff series, you know, he took on the mantle of a leader because there basically wasn't anybody else. And he did it admirably, yeah. You know, and all this, all NBA recognition, all-star selections and all that, fantastic, brilliant. But nobody's ever looked at Julius Randle and said, see, once we get to become a playoff team or become a contending team or whatever, he's going to be our guy, do you know? Like, and I was so so encouraged during that Atlanta game, because what I've wanted from Randle for a long time is that he becomes this kind of complementary player. Randle's a really good passer, you know, it's undeniable, and he's a really good rebounder as well. What Randle is not good at is getting into his head and trying to basically do it all, and becomes this kind of selfish player, thinks that he needs to be the number one superstar and trying to kind of win the game on his own. And the whole kind of offense kind of breaks down in that respect. And during that Atlanta game, I thought he was fantastic. His shooting's still not quite back to where it was, but the way he was playing a kind of complementary role and taking a back seat to RJ especially and Brunson when he started firing threes and things, that I was like, this is the Randle that I've always wanted, do you know? And I was like, maybe this is a stepping stone into a new world with Randle. And I was so encouraged. And then the Pelicans games, I mean, there's loads of reasons why that game went as it went, but I just saw the old Randle back again, and I could see him getting frustrated. I could see him just thinking, oh, I need to take this team on my back and do this. And I was just like, no, you don't. You don't. Stick to the plan. Yeah. Stick to your new role. It was worked perfectly before. Yes, the game's not going as it should, but that doesn't mean that you have to basically try and turn yourself into Michael Jordan, do you know? And it was just really disappointing, and I just thought it was a real negative of the week. But it's only one game. It's only three games. Once I'd cooled down a little bit after the Pelicans game, you know, started thinking about it with a level head, and you know, it's one game, and you know, that shouldn't be the way that he plays going forward. But fingers crossed that you can get him back into that more kind of complementary third option role.
If the team needs it, I think he can do it again. As he did it last year, we discussed it many times, how he took a step back on shooting. And you mentioned the games against the Hawks. He only took 10 shots that game. Mm-hmm. Yep. 17 points, 12 rebounds, 9 assists. He had 3 turnovers, but so did RJ, and quickly had 4 turnovers. So, yeah. So turnovers happen. It's the next. We know they happen.
He had no turnovers in the first game, remember, as well.
Yeah, exactly.
16 assists and no turnovers in the first two games. So I'll sign up for that any day. So
think that the game against New Orleans brought us not the Randle of old, like you were saying. I don't think it was that idea he had of carrying the team on his back. I think it was more the thing of Zion's over there, and he plays the same, and I want to prove and I want to show I'm better. He went into that side of him. So because I think he tried too hard. Yeah, I agree with you absolutely. He tried too hard, trying to do stuff. He ended up not shooting the ball. He had 15 shots, so it's not amazing, but he missed a lot more. He shot 26% in that game against the Pelicans, along with 8 turnovers. I mean, he had 10 points, 8 turnovers. I was looking at the stat because people were raving about how Mitchell Robinson had those 10 offensive rebounds. Those are extra possessions. If you negate those extra possessions, offensive rebounds with the Randall turnovers, that's only plus two or extra possessions. It's a like from one guy. Obviously, if you combine the entire team, it's a lot of turnovers. So, yeah. But I don't think he reverted back. I think he was people are want him to. People are weird. Like, on Twitter, you saw it. People are already killing Randall because of against the Pelicans. It's the one that's fresher in our mind, so it's the one we tend to go to immediately. But we asked for this Randall, this facilitator Randall, a lot, and we got him, and we're complaining because he doesn't score. I mean, he can't do both. It's basically it. Yeah. So people just want the ball less on his hands, but he's effective with the ball in his hands. And the first three games, you saw guys playing well, like RJ Barrett playing well with the second unit and with the first unit. So it's working in some way. But when he forces it, yeah, it's not pretty. Those getting from zero turnovers in the first game to eight turnovers in the third game. It's a completely different round that we have. So again, that amazing roller coaster ride. But my negative,
I was just going to say, I think you're right. Zion as well. I think he's, you know, Randall's not the sort of person that's used to being bullied. And I think that was
embarrassing for him.
I think certainly with the turnovers, I think it got into his head a little bit, and he made some silly mistakes. So
that play where he just sends Randall to the floor and then just flexes it on him. I think that's, you're doing that to a two-time All NBA. He's gonna try and come back at you, and it was not the night. We saw Julius Randle do this many, many times, especially against guys like Sabonis, who he destroys, and others. So yeah, it was not his night. And it's hope for better. But again, my negative, I'm gonna just pick an old reliable here. I'm not gonna debate it between a couple of things, but I don't want to go into that right now. I will save this the tips section for later. That's not that negative. It's just thing. But the negative to me, it's that 3-point shooting is all over the place. It's embarrassing. It tends to be embarrassing sometimes how we just jack up threes and no one hits them. It's amazing. The game against the Pelicans, 7 of 37. From three, it's 18% from three. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, my problem with the 3-point shooting quickly is just we're not a 3-point shooting team. We will get games where, like against the Hawks, where you know everything is dropping and we're playing with confidence. But what I want to see is, you know, if you're like a Golden State or something like that, and you know, you miss, say, the first few 3-pointers, you're going to keep shooting because you've got two of the greatest shooters of all time on your team. Yeah. It's going to come round eventually. But when you're a team that's not particularly known as a 3-point shooting team, if you're missing the first few shots, don't try and shoot your way out of it. You know, have a plan B, try something else, because sometimes it's just not your night. And I could see they were just frustrated and jacking up shots, and it's just like, it was just pure. And again, we'll come on to Tibbs, obviously, but that was one of my major criticisms and it's one of the major criticisms of Tibbs in general is just the lack of, a plan B, a kind of, right, this isn't working, let's do something else.
Yeah, they get frustrated and they just start bad plays, trying to, and a lot of ISO plays, and it lead to nothing. You need to bad shots from three. We're not a good 3-point shooting team, and we tend to always have a couple of shots late in the shot clock, just jacking up the three, see if it goes.
One thing though is
bad shooting.
Yeah, you're totally right about the 3-point shooting, but I mean, we do have to recognise that obviously we did shoot well in the first, certainly the second game, but not, you know, it was a bit up and down in the first game. But yeah, we're getting good shots, and I think just the tiredness set in. A lot of these shots were coming up short in the Pelicans game. There's a lot of fatigue there, in the legs. So I think that's where the drop off came. So we'll see in the next.
It's the back to back, but it's also the first back to back of the season. The three games in, so it should be fresh.
Yeah.
I don't know. Even the game against Atlanta. I don't know if you know this. If you saw this, we shot 45% from three, 20 of 44, and IQ shot 1 from 9 from three. I didn't even understand how many threes he jacked up. Again, this game against the Hawks, it was another. The first game against Boston, IQ was amazing. The second game against the Hawks, he was not that good, and we still won, but he was not that good. Obviously, Brunson had that 31 point outing, so it was great. But yeah, 3-point shooting, we need to, because we get the open looks, we get the good looks, and sometimes we're too tentative to shoot, or we don't shoot right away, do the extra pass, and the extra pass doesn't help, especially in guys like Grimes. Josh Hart as well. Yeah, Josh Hart. I said Quentin Grimes because he's the guy I'm looking at to be our shooter from that or on that lineup. The guy who supposedly can knock down the catch and shoot is good at it. I've said it many times that IQ is not the greatest player when it comes to the catch and shoot. He needs to create his own shots off the dribble. I think he's much better in rhythm than just sitting in the corner. And but we need to. If the shot isn't falling, I said this in a season review I did this past week, we need to be more consistent at shooting the 3-point ball, because it can't be 18% to 45% or from 45 to 18%. We need to be in the middle. We need to be at least consistent and get those good looks and shoot them. That's jittery, that fixed, that fake that never goes, and then it's the 3-point shooting, man. It cost us against the Heat last playoffs, and we know it's going to cost us games, just like the free throws. But I focus on the 3-point shooting because it was bad last night. It was really really bad.
I think the fatigue. I think you're right. It's early in the season, but. You know, it was tough. It was two road games back to back. It's never easy. Also, I think in the first game and you could after the first game in the Atlanta game, we put so much into the game. The fourth quarter against Atlanta, you could see the guys were pretty gassed. You know, and I think that just carried over into the Pelicans game. The first quarter in the Pelicans game, they just looked absolutely exhausted. And I was joking with you beforehand that Jimmy Butler's already been rested. Game two, I think it was. And Embiid's out tonight, a home opener for the Sixers. He's out with rest as well. It's just...
It's ridiculous.
It's nonsense, isn't it? I mean, it's you know, one of the main rules the NBA was supposed to be bringing in was about, you know, stopping this, you know, the star players taking games off. So it'd be interesting to see if there's any kind of comeback from
it. It's weird. Like, would you rather have your star player, the star player from the Embiid, miss one game and be able to play the next five? Or he plays this game and ends up getting injured because he's a guy who's injury prone?
Yeah.
I mean, what does Lee prefer there? Like, what do you do? Okay.
Jimmy's already maybe said don't do... that he coasts a regular season. You know, he builds himself up for the playoffs. So I don't see a problem with it. It's where I'd like the Knicks to get to a point where they can, you know, coast a few games and once we talked about this last week about, you know, once we're set as a playoff team, then you can start to think about, you know, maybe let's pull a few players out towards the playoffs and just give them a bit of rest, and so that when the playoffs come, you're ready to go.
Do you know who your coach is?
Yeah.
Resting players. Do you know who your coach is?
Exactly. You know, it's one of his downsides, definitely. You know, and I mean, the flip side to that is that, you know, the guys that have been playing the most minutes for Tibbs in the last few years, which are Randall and RJ, have hardly missed a game, you know, and they've been our best players. Yeah. So you're like, well, maybe there's something in that, you know, that, you know, you're actually getting into a rhythm and you actually stay injury free by playing more regularly rather than taking games off, getting cold.
I mean, it's the old conversation as well we have with Tibbs. It's the players, the rotations, the number of minutes they play. They haven't been playing that many minutes, by the way. 35, 34. No, so it's not heavy. It's only three games, but it's a game against Boston and Celtics. That's where they played. No player reached 40 minutes so far. So more reliance on the bench.
Sorry, just to jump in, Rafa. There's been a lot of talk this week about playing the hot hand, and, you know, why does Tibbs pull certain players out? And you're like, well, isn't that Tibbs resting players and reducing their minutes? You know, he's got to give them a rest sometime, and maybe he is trying. I don't know.
He's the opposite of the coaches. He rests players when they're getting hot.
Yeah.
He's the opposite. He's the anti. Yeah. It's but yeah, since you mentioned, we can before we go into the positives of the week, can I mention that, because it was a huge discussion this week has been, because there's a guy who's been playing for starters, he is starting the season well, which is amazing. It never happened before, ever, and he's been playing pretty well. It's RJ Barrett, who's been good on offense, good on defense as well, which is maybe the biggest surprise. He's been a very reliable defender. He's been active. He's been trying. He does dumb mistakes still. It's RJ Barrett. We know it. But yeah, he's been well, and he's been taken out in moments where the Knicks have no offense other than RJ Barrett. He's been starting with the offense. And this is my question. I said I had a question about Tibbs, and this is where it surrounds this area, because we're starting to figure out that Tibbs wants to set his rotations. Six minutes in, this guy leaves, and this guy comes in with no regard on how the game of the flow of the game. And I know it's set the rotations, get him ready to the second units, for example, of RJ Barrett. But if he's the only one providing offense, don't you think that maybe you can adjust those rotations mid-game? I know you have those set rotations and most coaches have it, but they seem to be more lenient with what they do. Like, okay, this guy is scoring the ball, is defending well. Maybe let him be out there and rest another guy. Maybe rest Randall instead of RJ or whatever.
Sure.
This is my question. If he shouldn't setting rotations, if he shouldn't be, Tibbs shouldn't be more open to changing those minutes a bit if the game asks for it.
No, I do agree with that. And you know, it's funny. Like you do sometimes hear him saying things like, oh, we just liked that group that were out there, so we kept, and I don't think it's a steadfast thing where he's just like, right, these guys are going to play up until 2 minutes to go in the first quarter, and then I'm going to pull them and put these exact players in. I don't think it's quite as...
It sure looks like it.
It looks like it. Certainly it does, yeah. But I think sometimes we just... have a memory of, you know, maybe one or two incidents where, you know, it's happened and it's so glaring that that it kind of you forget about all the other times when the rotations are working well like that. But yeah, I do agree. And we talked about, you know, how he treated Obi back last week, about, you know, just pulling him as soon as he makes a mistake and things like that. So, I mean, it's an incredibly hard job to get it right, because, you know, especially with the thing with RJ at the moment, I think, is that he's got this idea that, you know, he's getting him running with the second unit. So to get him running with the second unit, he has to pull him at a certain point so that he can reintroduce him at another point and run with another unit and get enough rest that, you know, when the second unit's coming in, that, you know, RJ is ready to go and kind of lead that unit. So I get that it's, you know, he's probably a bit more structured with RJ's minutes at the moment when he's coming in and out, and it's harder for him to kind of ride with the hot hand, so to speak, because then that's going to screw up his whole plan for the second unit when they come in. So I don't know. I find it is a difficult job to get it right. You know, you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know, if he takes him out and it all works perfectly, then he looks like, you know, he's a genius. And, you know, if it goes wrong, then we all kill him for it. So, but in general, I agree with you. It's kind of maddening at times that we can't just keep these guys in. But more importantly, I think, rather than pulling people that are the hot hand, is not taking out people who are struggling, you know, and giving them.
Yeah,
I think it's been often said about Rando, about, you know, making Rando accountable when he's struggling, and I don't always agree with that. Just kind of from a teaching side of things, you can't treat people the same. You know, different people get. You know, different players can kind of thrive in different situations. You know, some of them need screamed at, some of them need pulled off to the bench, some of them need, you know, just an arm around the shoulder, some of them need just constant, you know, praise, no matter what they do wrong. That's just how a manager and a kind of a coach has to deal with a successful team. So, without knowing the ins and outs of what makes Randall tick, I think, yeah, that's the kind of more frustrating one for me sometimes, where, and I've seen it a lot with Brunson these first few games, where it's just like Brunson just needs to sit at the moment. He's getting so frustrated. He's missing so many shots that he just needs to sit and gather himself, gather his thoughts before he goes back out there. But you feel like these set rotations are just so kind of structured and stuck that, you know, oh, if I take Brunson out there, that just messes everything else up. And you're like, well, no, you just trust your players and trust that you've got guys in the bench that can step in. So yeah, that's the most frustrating thing for me at the moment, is just seeing that. But I don't think Tibbs is ever going to change. So he's at an age now.
Oh no, it's accepted by Knicks in general that Tibbs is not going to change. It's just trying to see where, just trying to rile you up a bit.
But I think it's a real important point that people that are, you know, wanting this kind of, I guess, more modern style coach to come in. I think modern style coaches are a little bit more flexible with these kind of things and with rotations and things like that. So I think in styles of play. So I think that is, if you are one of those that, you know, wants to bring in a Johnny Bryant or one of these kind of young young coaches, then that's probably one of the main things that ticks you off about Tibbs and why you want a change is, you know, is those kind of rotations. So I totally get it. I really do.
More than the rotations itself, and more than giving the rest to RJ so he can come stronger later on. More important than that is when you have guys that a duo that's working. For example, you see a lot of Emmanuel Quickley with RJ Barrett, with Brunson and Randall. And you see it as in the second unit, which has been a very good surprise to me how that worked. This is actually my positive for the week. We discussed how this second unit looked, might have been a might be a little bit shaky. We said it. We might struggle with the second unit. I liked it. Hartenstein with DiVincenzo and Hart and RJ and Quickly. I think it worked pretty well. I don't remember the duo of Emmanuel Quickly and RJ Barrett working this well before. This thought came to my mind, like maybe Obi not being there. And we know Obi was the first guy to get the pass from Emmanuel Quickly. He was the guy who was looking for it. Made the change and made it the adjustment here for the second unit. This is my positive, the way the second unit presented themselves, especially against the Boston Celtics. They always kept us in the game. And this is my problem, my issue with the not the rotations, the minutes, but the moment. Okay, it's working. Quickly and handling the ball was working with RJ Barrett. They were doing well. We bring in Brunson and Randall in, and they didn't have good tremendous games against Boston. So instead, in terms of scoring and it's a bit more Brunson handling the ball and whatnot, because Randall had all the assists. But especially with Brunson, so RJ went to the bench. Quickly was handling the ball, initiating the offense really well. Everything was flowing, and the moment Brunson came in, we just it should be it normally give the ball to Brunson, let him run the offense, and the guys work around him. But that didn't work all game long, and that wasn't working the fourth quarter, and the ball never came back to Quickly's hands. I think that's the player wanting to show himself in the moment. But that's also Tibbs needs to, okay, let's use Quickly. Maybe it's a regular season thing. Like, it's regular season, so let's get the guys flowing. If it's the playoffs, it works differently. Maybe we know Tibbs adjusts more in the playoffs than in the regular season. Normally, Alfred Payton years ago and Quickly just played 5 minutes these last playoffs, the game where he only played 5 minutes because he was playing really, really poorly. But that's the thing again. The example is the game against Boston where the ball never returned to Quickly's hands. Never, he was never allowed to initiate and facilitate to others. And even when RJ came back, the ball still kept being in Brunson's hand and Randall. It never returned to the duo that was doing well at the second unit. So to me, that's issue sometimes I have. Like, it's the game plan. You just follow the game plan no matter what. No matter if Brunson is hitting shots or not. No matter if Randall is being able to facilitate or not. Like, again, New Orleans, if you were a coach, and I was seeing that from Randall, maybe try something different. Julius, let go of the ball. Let's try something different. RJ, initiate Quickly. Do it. DiVincenzo, do it. Try something different. Let's not bark at the same tree because it's not working. That's my issue here. Not the minutes. It's players need the rest. If RJ, he's playing well. Let's play him 48 minutes. Maybe after the 40th minute, he becomes a little bit flustered. Especially defending guys like Jason Tatum, for example.
Yeah.
I get it. It's just it's more about the game plan issue. It's because again, getting back to the conversation we had about the 3-point shooting, if it doesn't work, we don't know what to do. And it seems like that with the game plan. If Brunson's shot isn't falling, he keeps going to it, forcing it, and the ball keeps not going in, and we don't do anything different and lose games. But back to the positive, I am loving this second unit, the energy. Even though Josh Hart hasn't been as effective as he was last year, he's been pretty bad. I don't want to say pretty bad, but he's been worse. And DiVincenzo has been also some stints he's good, some stints he's missing layups. I don't know what's wrong with missing layups. What is that? But I'm loving Hartenstein has been playing pretty well coming back. Yeah, and Quickly and RJ, I'm loving that duo. Loving how they're functioning and playing off each other. So really big surprise for that second unit to work as smoothly as it's working. Especially because it's Josh Hart and RJ Barrett in the same lineup. Working. Imagine that.
But I mean, with Hart as well, it's a surprise to me because, you know, yes, he played in FIBA, but not in anything like the amount that Brunson did. And in a kind of more complimentary role, he's not under a huge amount of pressure there. I would have thought he would have taken a hell of a lot of confidence from being first of all selected for that squad and then playing quite a fairly big role in it. But then as well, the only change in the roster from last year is effectively bringing in one of his best friends. So you're like, he seems so out of sorts at the moment. It's very odd.
A lot of boneheaded plays.
Just bad concentration. I don't know where it's coming from because I'd say you would have thought of everything that's gone on in the last 6 months for him, he would be starting the season flying. But it just doesn't seem that way. It's again, maybe just early season rustiness. I don't know. That FIBA tournament's maybe just throwing the routines out a little bit for quite a few, Brunson included, and just not had the off season that they usually have. Different players deal with it in different ways.
I mean, and if you look at it, the United States have failed this World Cup. Canada didn't. So morale is different.
Yeah, that's true.
Might be a factor as well. So, but that, I don't like the FIBA excuse because you have a guy who always struggles during the season, RJ Barrett, and he played it and he's playing good.
Yeah.
He's playing much better than he's playing what we expected of him, always expected of him.
But he also ended the playoffs, well, the playoffs in general, pretty much really well. So he's got a lot of confidence from that. And it's just great to see that he's just carried that into the season. So
I love it. I'm loving it right now, by the way. I'm confidently can say that on par with Mitchell Robinson. Let's give him his flowers. He's been absolutely amazing. Him and RJ Barrett have clearly been the best two players in the Knicks right now.
Yeah.
And by the way, they have an amazing connection. You see RJ with Mitch, the pick and roll works to perfection.
Yep.
And you barely get to see this so far this season, you barely get to see RJ and Mitchell working together, which is baffling to me.
I've never been a big fan of Mitch, as I've mentioned many times, but he seems to have matured a lot for a start. You know, the silly fouls have gone. Well, I mean, they were pretty much gone last season as well, but that's continued. He's looking strong. He's, you know, remember that those times where he came back £1,000 heavier or whatever it was, you know, like that's all gone. He's looking, you know, pretty perfect, you know, body wise, and he just seems to be really controlled at the moment. I know Breen mentioned it in the commentary a few times that, you know, he just seems to have really matured as a person as well. And, you know, he's just at that age as well. He is at a maturing age. And, long may it continue. I think he struggled first game with Porzingis, but I think that's just a bad matchup for Mitch, that kind of player, that kind of stretch five, where he has to get dragged out of the paint to try and, you know, guard in the perimeter. That's just not Mitch's strength. I think the last couple of games he's had more kind of easier matchups than for him to kind of show what he can do.
Yeah, but he's been amazing. We kind of overlook what Mitch brings to this team, but he has been absolutely incredible. I can't stress it enough. Alex, that's get to a brighter spot. What's your positive of the week? I think I know where you're going, but the big positive.
I loved absolutely everything to do with the Atlanta game. I could barely criticize anything about it. You know, the coaching was great. I thought a lot of the performances were great from the major players. The obvious with Brunson, just firing away at three, just seeing him when Brunson's in full flow in that confidence mode eight where he's 12. Just hitting everything. It's just, which is strange as well, though, because where Brunson last season, he got always success just, you know, finishing in the paint, where it's his finishing from short distances, which is actually let him down a lot. But yeah, that whole performance, I just absolutely loved. First game, knew it was going to be tough being the Celtics. Knew it was going to be tough with Porzingis because I thought that would work well when he's healthy. I was just like, oh, this is the season to start properly starting. Did give me a major heart attack for the last minute, but with a few crazy plays. But in general,
those final minutes were bad. I didn't catch the game live, so the only game we won, I didn't catch it live, so go figure. I saw it the day after, and I know we won. We had won the game because I saw the score. I saw the score beforehand, and I was screaming, what are you doing? What? Is it possible to change the score and end up losing? It was pretty boneheaded moves as well.
And if you're talking about stars having bad starts to the season, Trae Young's not exactly having the best start to the season. He's been pretty
Trae dreadful. Young in Atlanta, I think that's going to end pretty soon.
Beginning of the end, yeah. Because he had all the problems with the coach last year. And
Yeah.
I think a lot of teams have worked him out a little bit in how to guard him. How to kind of bring
more
down his strengths.
How to defend him. How to play him on defense.
Yeah.
They're not able to hide him as well. It's a team. It's a problem from the Hawks as well. They can't hide him as good as they used to do. And you saw there's so many bad plays there. It's amazing how Trey is bad at defending. And people talked about RJ being poor defending 2 years ago. He was bad in last year as well, but nothing is worse. Imagine a backcourt of James Harden and Trae Young defending. Amazing.
I know.
But he was really, really, really poor. So, so this was the week. It was the week of the Knicks. Any thoughts on that? I don't know if you, because I haven't heard anything you had to say about Dante DiVincenzo. What do you thought about him this week? He was kind of all over the place in some games.
Yeah.
Again, those missed layups. What the hell is that? So DiVincenzo misses layups. Josh Hart doesn't shoot the three. Is that the combo?
Although, to be perfectly honest, that's, as I understood it, how he was advertised. From what I heard was, you know, he's a great hustle player, great on steals, or can obviously shoot, is a good defender, but he's terrible at finishing around the basket. That's what I heard before he'd even signed for the Knicks. And everything that I've read and heard about him is come true, do you know? And it's if that's the one part of your game that you're really struggling with, that's something that you can surely kind of get in practice, do you know, and work at and get better at, do you know? If somebody doesn't have good defensive instincts, that's quite hard to teach somebody. Effort level is not something that's easy to kind of drum into somebody, just having that kind of killer instinct, all these kind of things. Just learning to do a layup is something that surely just
so bad. Right? Those
those
misses are so bad. It's amazing.
But remember, RJ struggled as well early in his career from that kind of
RJ. RJ struggled finishing around the basket. Are you sure?
Yeah,
because I am. but at least DiVincenzo can defend. RJ couldn't. Yeah. So yeah.
and importantly, when we're talking about Obi as well, and that's another thing I've been keeping an eye on, this kind of small ball lineup. Again, something that Tibbs, I think, kind of having nightmares about, having been forced into doing. You know, I think the problem people have with small ball lineups is that they just think, right, it's just a case of throwing out guys that can shoot the ball and guys that are smaller, and it's just about kind of trying to force the action like that. But yeah. Successful small ball teams, like we always think of the Warriors or whatever, are players that can play multiple positions on the court, so that, you know, rotations while they're actually in play can cover for the lack of size. Do you know? And I think that's where a lot of the problems with Obi, first of all, came about, was that he just wasn't an adaptable player. There was a lot of talk about playing him at the five and playing him at the three, so you could play Randall and Obi together, and you were like, it just didn't seem to work, you know. And in that side of things, I trusted the coaching staff, where they were just like, look, we had a look at it in practice and it was yeah, we didn't like it. So but I think with Hart and DiVincenzo, and these are players that can play multiple positions, so they're a lot more adaptable, and we can get away with playing a bit of a small ball lineup. And it's had mixed success but just now, but you know, again, I think it's just needs games and needs practice with it. So but yeah, it's interesting to see that I think DiVincenzo is that type of player, so can just play a few different positions.
I like the small ball lineup, but I would like for us to have on the bench a guy we know we can use at the four if needed. Instead of Randall, of course, instead of Julius Randall. You know, it's the backup thing. We have all guards.
You didn't like Sims? You didn't like Sims in preseason?
Well, not Sims and Mitch. That was, what was that? That monstrosity. I don't know. It's,
yeah.
For example, you talk about Sims. I think Sims is more comfortable defending the perimeter. So against a guy like Porzingis, there's someone you can try there. Sims or those stretch fives. He's not perfect, but he will be a lot more comfortable than Mitch. Obviously, not playing him over Mitch, not playing Mitch is ridiculous, but at some point, if it's not working like it was not working with the Celtics, maybe try out Jericho Sims. See if it works or not, if it helps. If he's a guy who can use situationally, situational players for Tibbs are just bench players for the rest of the league. They just don't play. But that was something I would like to maybe try out, see if it works better or not.
I'm sure it's one of these kind of matchup dependent situations where they are going to be able to find a team to play Sims at. Maybe the Cavaliers with their two bigs. Yeah. I don't know.
They're coming up. Before we go there, the season preview, the week ahead preview. Let's talk about the big topic and now in the NBA, which is flopping, or the new rule on flopping, which to me,
the Jalen Brunson rule.
Yeah, to me that is flopping because it's maybe we're more used to it. Because we see football, soccer, and we see whether the guys are flopping or more or not. It's a very traditional soccer thing. But when the guy touches you and you fall down, it's not automatically flopping, because you can lose balance and fall down, not get fined for losing your balance and falling down. And they always do this. Every year, there's some new rule they try and implement, and it seems like referees have no idea what to do with it. Like, they're just trying it out. And then they have to usher out an excuse because, oh, we missed the call and we call it on the other. So we completely missed the call and then give it out a technical for flopping, which it was even worse, like what happened again to game against Boston, and which was automatically a 6-point swing for the Celtics. It would be a different game if that call wasn't called. It's a flopping rule. It's weird. Again, they will need to adjust to it. The referees need to know what they're doing. Because again, I don't think they do still. They're just is they're calling flops in any other game? I haven't noticed really. I saw the game. The game against with the Knicks. I mean, a whole game with Trae Young and Trae Young didn't flop once. Yeah, unlikely.
Exactly.
But yeah, what do you think of this? How are you looking at it? It's
to be honest, every single season there's one new law that gets brought in and forgotten about within a few weeks. The initiating contact one, I always remember that was one that came in, and I thought, I love that rule. You know, I really hope they keep this going. And it lasted about 2 or 3 weeks, and then it was never seen of again. It was, you know, I hated that kind of jumping into players, you know, and you know, and then throwing the ball up towards the basket. And it's just like, that's just, it's crap to watch, you know. But with the flopping, I think I get it that, and LeBron always comes up, LeBron gets called a flopper at times, right? But LeBron's like the most ridiculously strong player that if he goes through in the paint against 2 or 3 defenders and he's getting hit 3 or 4 or 5 times in the thing, he's so strong that these guys just bounce off him. That's still a foul, you know, in the textbook. But the referees don't see it because he's just going straight through them. And his idea, well, his kind of excuse for the flopping is the fact, well, if I don't exaggerate the contact, then the referee doesn't see it. Because otherwise, the referee is just going to think, well, you know, his motion has not changed at all. He's still able to just barrel through people. Whereas you get somebody like Trae Young, who's, you know, a third of the size of LeBron or whatever, you know, he's going to, if he gets hit, it's going to be a lot more exaggerated than if LeBron gets hit in the same way, you know. So that's always the excuse for flopping, is that, you know, it's bringing the attention to the referee. Well, a foul's a foul at the end of the day. And whether it's against LeBron or it's against Trae Young, it's still a foul. And you have to call in the same way. But if it's somebody that's flopping without any contact at all, then yeah, that has, you know, that has to be stamped out. And it's fine to stamp it out. I don't know if I like the fact that it brings like a technical out of it as well. I don't know.
It's not a technical. It's an unsportsmanlike.
Yeah, it's just like stick to the fiends or whatever. Just and embarrass the players on Twitter or whatever if you're calling it. But I don't know if I like it actually impacting the game like that. I mean, maybe their idea is, well, we make examples of a few people in the early weeks, and then they'll just naturally stop it. So I get that, but it's so frustrating. And the fact that they've got so many of these wrong as well is kind of embarrassing to the league. So maybe they will tone it down a little bit now.
Players tend to, and we've all heard this expression in the NBA, players tend to sell the call, sell the foul. Like they exaggerate things to get it. You hear it when Knicks go into the paint, you just hear that, hey, like, I am getting hit, like, hey ref, I'm getting hit.
And every one player does shoot, and one, I hate that, where they're going up and go, and one.
Yeah, because they're asking for the call, so that's, should they ban it? Because if they're yelling, well, that's kind of flop, because it doesn't, you know, it does. You get shoved, you don't need to yell. You're exaggerating it. So everything that's theatrical, it should be called, right?
Yeah.
So it's obviously it's more nuanced than that. It's the very theatrical. But when a guy falls down from getting touched, I mean, loses balance. You can't call that a flop and find a player for that.
I hated the one, the DiVincenzo one, where he wasn't even asking for the foul. He was just off balance.
Exactly.
And he was kind of, he didn't fall down to the ground. He just went off balance and he was kind of, and that happens. If you're running at full pelt on a basketball court and somebody nudges you, you're going to be off balance. And he just lost his footing a little bit. And it was just like, that is not a, you know, he's not trying to throw himself to the ground and trying to get a foul. He's just.
Yeah. And he then didn't complain to the referee or anything. It's like, if Jalen Brunson is the biggest flopper of the NBA, come on, Have you seen Jalen Brunson?
He does flop, right? Like, he's had a lot of criticism in the past of when he goes into the paint, he throws his head back. I don't know if you've ever seen that, the way he does that.
Yeah, of course.
So, in that respect, you know, he's not an angel, but yeah, the ones he got called on, especially the one where he landed on his foot. Which should have actually been a flagrant the other way, but yeah, that was just ridiculous. Especially when the referees are reviewing these and still missing goals, it's just crazy.
It's like you said, it's the new rule. I think we both said it. It's the new rule that they don't know what they're doing with it. They're just trying to see if what fits, and. Yeah, they're using the Knicks as guinea pigs in Jalen Brunson, as it seems. Yeah, so you mentioned the Cavs in 5 minutes ago. So, yeah, they're coming up this week. We have three games. Another back-to-back.
Yeah.
Another back-to-back, really. So we play at Cleveland with the Cavs. The day after, we play in MSG against the Cavs. Never like these back-to-back with the same teams. I don't know. They're weird. Yeah. And we play in Milwaukee against the Bucks. So, yeah, this will be a ride again. They have a very, very friendly schedule, as people, as Knicks fans know right here. So, where do we end up here?
Oh God! I know what you mean. It's I don't know if the league are trying to create a rivalry from us after the playoffs, so they have the back to back with the same team, and you know it's trying to kind of create that playoff buzz again or something like that. It's just madness. But I mean, the Cavs, I think a lot of people obviously disrespected them after the series win, and you know, still a very, very good team. I think they'll end up, I know they've not started the best, but I think they'll probably end up third overall at the end of the season. And quite a bit behind the Bucks and the Celtics, but I think they'll still come in third. They've improved their roster. Mobley will still, you know, be a year older, and he's looked really good so far. I think Jarrett Allen's out, but maybe that opens up Mobley to kind of go it alone a little bit more. I think a bit more of a balanced team. So I would like to come out of that at least with, obviously, you know, a game, probably the MSG game. I don't fancy the Bucks at all. So I think week-wise, I think we're probably looking at 1-2 as a realistic.
Again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I meant, too. 2-4. 1-2. I don't think we beat the Cavs back-to-back games, especially like with the Cavs will come out blazing, trying to clean their image. So I don't think we take both games.
Yeah.
If we take any, it will be rough. I think if the team takes the team that takes the first one doesn't take the second one, it's my idea. So here and against the Bucks, I don't know. It's the Bucks are actually down 13 against the Hawks right now as we're recording.
Okay.
But yeah, it's I think it's a loss as well. It's the Bucks. It's unless they rest players. If they'll rest Lillard and Giannis, maybe we have a chance. But I don't think so. So yeah, I think it's 1-2 as well. It will be a 2-4 start for the Knicks. A long time we haven't have a start like this, start to the season. But I think that's where we're heading.
Garland has injury issues as well. So Garland and Allen are struggling injury-wise.
It's the Mitchell game. He's going to score 60 against us. It's basically one of those games. It's the Mitchell game.
Possibly.
So yeah, so this is it, guys. This was a week for the New York Knicks. Again, a roller coaster of a ride. And if you want to follow us, keep in touch with the podcast. Follow us on X at Worldwide Knicks Podcast. You can follow us. Me and Alex are up there talking and debating and losing years of our lives talking to you guys, which is we love you all. Let's hope for better play. Let's hope for less old Randall and better 3-point shooting. It's basically what we want for this week, and a win, just a win. We're not getting too. We don't want you don't want a lot. We just want one win. So, guys, thanks for listening. See you next week. Go Knicks. We'll be right back.